Welcome to Power Play on a day of frantic prime ministerial schmoozing and speaking in New York with business leaders and youth and world leaders. The latest on Justin Trudeau storming the Big Apple comes up in 1 minute. Also ahead, the government's proposed tax proposals, be they fair or unfair, continue to amplify the political noise in the House of Commons. Today we talk to a group which has been relatively quiet until now. An expert on taxation of the family farm will join us. And Liberal MPs, more than 50 of them, are demanding the government act to remove innocent passengers from Canada's no-fly list. We'll speak to the parent of a child who always faces flying ordeals within Canada in the name of security. And she's expecting twins just a few weeks after expecting to win the NDP leadership. We have a feature interview with the leftist of the lefties. Nikki Ashton will be here. But first to New York, where the United Nations General Assembly is recovering from President Donald Trump yesterday and preparing to welcome Prime Minister Justin Trudeau tomorrow. Today, one day after Trump took aim at its nuclear deal, Iran's leader took center stage.
It will be a great pity if this agreement were to be destroyed by rogue newcomers to the world of politics. The world will have lost a great opportunity. By violating its international commitments, the new U.S. administration only destroys its own credibility and undermines international confidence in negotiating with it or accepting its word or promise.
Meanwhile, on the eve of the European free trade deal kicking in, Trudeau told a global business forum that Canada would continue to push for lower trade barriers.
Good trade deals, progressive trade deals that are focused on including everyone and not just multinationals and the wealthiest 1% and the country's bottom line, but actually citizens and workers, is the way to move forward in a growth that will include everyone.
All right, CTV's Kevin Gallagher is covering the Prime Minister's trip. He joins us from New York. Kevin, that was quite the whirlwind around the city. 10 meetings, I think I counted. Not business, political leaders, not to mention the kids. What caught your eye? I couldn't keep an eye on everything. What did you see that you found particularly interesting?
Well, you know, I think the fact that his schedule's just so packed. I mean, the earlier discussion with the Prime Minister of the Netherlands and also those two business leaders that he had in the morning with Bloomberg was interesting in the fact that it was sort of a discussion that sort of the underlying topic here is, you know, what to do about the economy when you have the largest and most powerful country in the world really preaching a form of economic nationalism. So that in itself was kind of interesting, and also the fact that Stephen Schwarzman, of course, the former head of the President Donald Trump's business council, now defunct, of course, was there as well within that discussion. So that was pretty interesting, but just incredible. Lots of events going on, lots of running across a very busy city, of course, with lots of motorcades, and not much time to talk to us, though, Don. Didn't hear much from the Prime Minister today.
Right, exactly. Now, he's got a bunch of these bilateral meetings. I'm sure they might have already gone on, and some of them are kind of smaller countries. Would I be correct in assuming that that's all about arm twisting for the UN Security Council seat?
You're hitting the nail on the head, and the PMO's pretty much said as much to me that, I mean, of course, they're discussing other issues, they're discussing things that are priorities for Canada, but one of the major priorities is getting a lot of these other countries, and especially because, you know, you might think that Tajikistan, for example, might not be a really important trade relationship with Canada, but certainly Tajikistan's vote in the General Assembly will be important for Canada getting a UN Security Council seat in 2021. So there were quite a few countries that wouldn't be on the sort of G7, G8, G20 circuit and wouldn't even be on some of the other, like, Asian type, you know, institutions or even things like that. So certainly you're right, a big push for that UN Security Council seat.
Tomorrow's speech, I don't know if that plays into that as well. Is he on a charm offensive to get that seat, or is there going to be a more blunt talk about the state of the world and Canada's place in it?
I think we'll see a lot of positivity and optimism. That seems to be a lot of what Trudeau's message is most of the time, especially what I understand is they're going to be focusing on Canada's role in the world, enforcing multilateralism, really fighting for gender equality across the world, and also the fight against climate change. Now, all those sort of topics are things that have been hit on a lot by many of the leaders. It will be interesting to see if they do take any time to mention North Korea, to mention some of the terrorist threats that other leaders have mentioned so far, above and beyond Trump, of course, who did it the loudest and the most brashly.
Is it fair to assume that Donald or Justin Trudeau will be trying to project this image of being the anti-Trump, or is that going too far?
You know, I think if you were to ask him or ask anyone within the PMO, they'd say, no, that's not what this is about. But it's almost impossible not to see the contrast. So certainly the underlying message is one of cooperation, multilateralism, and trade. But when you break it down, it's quite opposite from the messages that we heard, especially with those particular topics from Donald Trump. So there's more of an openness of borders, an openness of ideas, an openness of commerce that we don't hear from the more nationalistic view and also, you know, pessimistic view about world security that we heard from Donald Trump.
All right. We're going to find out tomorrow what Justin Trudeau plans to do, say in that address. One thing to keep an eye out for, Kevin, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say tomorrow if we're chatting, is how many people sit in the audience when he speaks. I remember some of the pullbacks from Stephen Harper's speeches, what he gave him there. There was nobody there. But anyway, we'll talk to you tomorrow about that.
We'll have to do a Trump, White House lawn, a compare picture.
All right. You got that right. All right. Thanks, Kevin. Back here in Ottawa, it was day three of taxing times for the government as the Conservative Party fired almost all its guns in question period at the finance minister and his plan to close loopholes for incorporated individuals. Here's the sound of a tax attack and the counterattack.
Mr. Speaker, I met Andrew, who is an apple farmer in New Brunswick, and he explained to me that his problem is this, that he will at some point in time, because of this impact, choose between his employees and his families. Now, Mr. Speaker, I don't think that under the minister's plan, Andrew being in a case where he has to think about one or the other is very fair. And I want to know why the finance minister is forcing Andrew to pay a 73% tax.
We are looking towards a system that does not encourage wealthy Canadians to incorporate, so they have a lower tax rate than middle-class Canadians. What we're trying to make sure is that people can invest in their business over the long term. That's our goal. We're certainly listening to people across the country to make sure that they will continue to invest in business, to create jobs, and to ensure that we have a healthy economy for this generation and the next.
All right. Well, we've heard from doctors, we've heard from small business associations about this tax changes. Perhaps one of the groups we haven't heard from are farmers, and maybe the harvest is coming in and they're too busy with that. I'm not sure. We're going to find out. Alan Sawyack is a tax accountant, but he's also working hard on the family farms as well. He's got experience out there. Alan joins us from Edmonton. All right, Alan, help me out here. Why have the farming community been so quiet by these tax changes? Aren't they affected by them?
Well, for the most part, the farmers... They really rely on their professionals that help them through these rules. And that's one of the reasons why, once these rules came out, I wrote a long summary, threw it out to the farm organizations, threw it out to the farmers out there. These rules are very complex. And so they look towards, people like us, the farm lobby groups, to really help them deal with these issues. And we have to remember that on the family farm, there's only so much time in the day. They're already spending 12 plus hours working on it. And it's kind of, they're a little bit alone on the island a little bit because, they have a lot to manage on their own and a lot of issues to work with. So maybe that's part of why they've been quiet so far.
All right. Well, explain to me what the impact is on the incorporated farmer in Canada that might have family that works with them. What's the tax change is going to do to them?
Well, let's first talk about, in the incorporated landscape and as well in the same landscape as unincorporated farms, one of the big issues is the reasonableness tests. Again, you know, the reasonableness test to all talks about income sprinkling. And so that affects all farms, you know, in terms of farm partnerships or farm corporations. There's an element of allocating income amongst farm family members that are active or inactive in the farm. And so those, they have these reasonableness tests. Like, for example, how much capital has been contributed to the farm to determine whether or not the income allocated to that farm individual, whether it is reasonable or not. Because if it's unreasonable, they're subject to the highest tax rate in their province. And so that's a lot to for the farmers to kind of stomach.